So I don't know if you've ever noticed, but the resurrection is never proclaimed at the end of Mark's gospel, the reading that we heard this evening. Mark chapter 15, verse 8, the very end of the reading that Bob read for us, significantly shorter than the first one, Bob. It must be a family trait. It's either you or Diana end up with the super long readings. But our short reading today from Mark stops at verse 8. But there are alternative versions that are available if you need a sequel. Two of them are often dismissed, but one of them, called the long ending, because we're full of imagination in biblical scholarship, is 11 extra verses numbered 9 to 20, added to this version we heard called, imaginatively, the abrupt ending. And those verses which appear do have three resurrection appearances, two of which are not believed by anyone, and the third one when the disciples finally gather together and are then given a commission to preach the gospel to the whole world, and Jesus goes whoop, up to heaven at the end. Most scholarship thinks that it does end here at verse 8. Certainly to us as modern readers, aware of the shape of the other gospels, used at this time of year to hearing multiple resurrection accounts from all of the other three gospels, the abrupt ending can seem jarring and incomplete. After all, how do we know about resurrection if they were too afraid to tell anyone? If everyone stays silent because of their fear, how did we end up here 2,000 years later? Well, it's pretty consistent with the Gospel of Mark to point out the inadequacy of Jesus' first followers. They're often referred to as slow or fearful or simply not getting it. I think that's from the original Greek. Many would say, and I believe this to be so, it's actually a method, a literary method used by the Gospel writer who we ascribe to Mark. And it might be John Mark, who was one of the early apostles, but we're not sure. It might be a method to get us to listen and to say, well, they didn't get it, but I do. I get who Jesus is. I understand the Jesus story. So I must be a believer, and I need to find out more. That's a pretty simplistic summary of that theory, but that's the essence of many scholars' thinking. Mark encourages us to do the work and feel affirmed in the conclusions that we come to. Even makes us feel a little bit clever for working things out when the apostles couldn't. The Gospel of Mark does more than that, though. It encourages us to make connections and to go further than the story initially does. That no matter how dull or fearful those first disciples may have seemed, the message did get out. There was more to come, and we are a part of that story. The gospel has been preached, the resurrection has been proclaimed, and there has been transformation. So there must have been something that happened after this, a change that made it possible for those first believers to live out their calling and share the good news with all. Mark is the earliest, in most opinions, of the Gospels. It gives the impression it's a bit rough and it's thrown together. And for those who know Koine Greek, the common Greek of the New Testament era, the language certainly seems to be less polished than the other synoptics. Matthew, Luke, and Mark are called synoptics because they have many similarities and seem to see things the same way. Syn meaning together, optic meaning seeing. Mark's Gospel is also a very long way away, language-wise, from the careful, polished, and poetic, metaphorical writing of the later Gospel of John. But again, Mark might be using a literary device to encourage us to get a sense of urgency from this Gospel, like the repeated use of the term immediately all through Jesus' ministry in Mark's Gospel. Immediately he did this, and then immediately after that he said this, and then immediately he went here. A quick reading of the whole of Mark, which can be done, I assure you, on the tube journey between Hounslow on the outskirts of London and Victoria when you know the bishop's going to quiz you on it. It can be done in an hour. But it can almost leave you breathless. Mark wants to foster this sense of urgency. Get out there proclaim the gospel, live as followers of Jesus. You get the message, so now do it. We are not to be fearful, but bold in our sharing, says Mark. And as the church has continued over centuries and bedded down and become an institution, we have lost something of that urgency, and indeed the boldness that caused the early followers to surmount their fear and live out the good news, a news that transformed lives and created a new, loving, justice-based, radical community that was known as the followers of the way. It was only when Christianity became the religion of empire under Constantine that their radical nature diminished. Far from being the pacifist, anti-empire organization it had been, the church becomes an organ of the state, an institution, and we still struggle with that today, as churches are seen to be conservative, ordered, and even stagnant. But what we are called to be, however, is urgent in our fierce tenderness, being loving, deeply dedicated to justice, peace, non-violence, and equity. We are called to the urgency of a proclamation of new life, a life which challenges this current order of haves and have-nots, of prejudice, division, and self-serving individualism. We are called to be prophetic bearers of a message of healing, a message of hope, a message of spirituality, a message of love. A message which is a threat to those invested in this world as it is, and who profit from the deep injustices in our society and the destruction of our world. Unlike those first disciples who we are told were at least initially fearful, we are told to take our inspiration from the myth of Daniel. I had to refer to it at least once. It was so substantial today. To stand for all that we know to be right and just, even if it means we are cast, metaphorically, I hope, into the lion's den. Pray God it may be so. Amen.